This is the Pitch Fishing Academy Cricket Show number 74. This is the Pitch Fishing Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchfishing.com and email us on mycricketcoach@pitchfishing.com. My name's David Hinchliffe from the UK.
And I'm Kevin Sampath from Australia. Coming up on this week's show, we have a chat with Afghanistan coach Kabir Khan. We talk to Gary Palmer, Pitch Fishing's batting coach. And as usual, we answer your questions for this week. But from now on, from this week onwards, we're going to be bringing in a guest coach to answer the readers' questions. And this week, we're going to have Sam Lavery. So strap yourselves in. And we can't really talk about anything, can we, David, this week? Because we've just got an action-packed show. So we really should get straight onto it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we just need to get straight in. We've got two interviews, and of course Sam's coming up on the phone to talk about your coaching questions. So yeah, let's just get on with the show.
And kicking it off this week, we have Afghanistan coach Kabir Khan. And if you haven't really heard the cricket news lately, the Afghanistan cricket team have really had a Cinderella story, haven't they, David?
Mm.
They started playing in 2001, but they've joined the World Cricket League in 2008. They've moved a couple of divisions in a couple of years, and the Afghanistan cricket team really just missed out on the 50-over World Cup qualifications, but they've done well to qualify for the 2020 World Cup, and they have been one of the better and ever-improving non-test playing nations. So, David, you've had a chat with Kabir, who's shared his insights, his experience, and his methods. So let's listen into your conversation with Kabir.
How important has coaching been to the success of Afghanistan?
Well, opposite thing that coaching could have played a lot of a big role in Afghanistan's cricket, and it has played a much bigger role in Afghanistan cricket because, as you know, it's the same bunch of boys who beat cricket for the last 8 years. And because they had local coach, they never had a chance to work with any foreigner coach or any qualified coach. So the team always used to go to the semifinals of Asian level and used to lose in the semifinals and go back. In the last 2 years that I've joined them, I joined them when they were 121 in the ranking, world ranking. And they are now number 11. So obviously that shows how much they improved with quality coaching.
How has that coaching changed from when they were having the less formal coaching into the more sort of formal qualified coaching like yourself? How has that, what changes have you made there?
Well, you know, cricket is not a game in modern time. It is only, if you treat it only as a game, it's just a complete plan. And it's just works both technical and tactical as well. And they were very good on the technical side because they are a good learner. There was nobody there to tell them their techniques, first of all. But on the other end, treating the match in different occasions, how to play as a batsman or how to bowl as a bowler. So a lot of tacticals were in there. We worked a lot on their mental abilities of the game as well. And obviously, all those things combined together made them very good cricketers. And I personally think that that was very necessary for them because these boys, they are very well built, ready to work hard. They are very keen learner, and they are quick learner as well. Plus, they need something to just put in their mind as well as a game plan because there is nothing such before that.
How have training camps helped the team improve?
Well, to be honest, for them, for Afghanistan boys, they only have their training camps. There's no domestic cricket. There's not a lot of grounds in Afghanistan. So whatever they learn, whatever they do, they only practice in the nets in the training camps. And they are quite expensive as well because we have to either go to India, Pakistan, or Sri Lanka to have our camps because there's no facilities in Afghanistan. So because they're too expensive, you can't have a lot of them, so we always try to have a 10 days or 2 weeks camp before any major tournament, which I personally think is not enough. What we do in those camps, we just regroup them. We try to just uplift their fitness level. We just try to uplift their game level according to the game because they have been coming from Division 6 5, and then 3-1. So obviously every division, when they go a step higher, we have to bring everything, fitness level, game, tactics, techniques, everything goes higher as well. So I personally, for me as a coach, the time is very short because we don't get enough time to work on a lot of things. But what we try to do, that we try to work with all different things. I'm lucky because the boys are very keen in learning, and they are very well built. They want to spend the in the ground, so that helps as well in a way that as a coach, when I want them to work hard the whole day, they can do it, and obviously that is helpful.
As the camps are your only opportunity to help the players improve, you must have to cram as much in as you can in the time you've got with them. How do you efficiently get as much in as you can in the short time period that you've got?
Well, that's what we do. We have to plan it properly, first of all. As I said, because they're a young boy, they've got a lot of energy. So what we do, we normally have two type camps. We have a morning session, then we have a break for lunch, and then we have an evening session as well. And that's the only way we can get results of a short camp. Otherwise, it won't be possible. So boys are very cooperative. They are full of energy. They want to do it as well. They are a good learner. They want to learn as well, which is very good for a coach, that you have got a bunch of boys who wants to learn. And that's how we manage it. Otherwise, there's no other way. 12 days or 14 days, anybody knows, is not enough for any big major tournament in the world. And obviously, they've been doing a maximum of 2 weeks camp to prepare for even the World Cup qualifiers. So, and they are showing the results as well, because if they can do it in 12 days or 14 days, I just, as a coach, I think if what will happen if you get full facilities and we could do it all year round, and the players play professional cricket all year round, they could do a lot of good things in cricket in future, provided they get the facilities.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, it shows how well they've done in such a short period. So, you know, imagine what they can do. You're right there. So how much difference can you make to, say, for example, a batsman's technique in that short period? Can you see a significant improvement in a batsman's technique in that 10, 12 days?
Well, as I said, time is too short. We work a lot on the mental side of it. We work a lot on the planning side of it. We work a lot on the technical side of it. On the technical side, it's a very short time to change a technique of any batsman or a bowler. So we don't get a lot of time for that. We just only do the fine-tuning sometimes. Like if something is very small and can make a big difference, a bigger difference, that's what we do and we change it. But we don't normally, I'm very careful about changing a lot of things because it's a lot of short time. And then we have to get the performance out of them. And those boys have been playing with that style of bat for bowling for a long period, like for 10, 12 years. They are bowling the same action. They are batting with the same stance. So as a coach, you don't want to touch that for a shorter period. If there's a longer period of time or it's an off-season, yes, you can do it. But in 12 days, we don't touch a lot of those things. But we still work on balances or we still work on a lot of techniques which don't change a lot of their game, their natural game. And I think it's working so far. But I think it's not going to work too much in the future, because they'll be playing against the top teams and they'll be playing against the top professionals. They have to be very, very good in their techniques. And obviously, once they are good in their techniques, they will need time for it, both batting, bowling, and fielding. But obviously, time can only make them better players.
We have back again Gary Palmer, batting coach for Pitch Vision. Gary Palmer is a first-class cricketer who played for Somerset, and he now helps younger players in the game with CCM Academy. So if you want to find out more about Gary Palmer and his coaching, please visit www.pitchvision.com/Gary Palmer. Let's have a listen in to what Gary has to say for us this week.
This question is from DG Martin. Don't know their first name, but DG Martin sent in a question. And it's regarding a left-handed batsman who constantly struggles to keep the ball on the ground when cover driving on the front foot. Is there any advice you can give?
Well, first you've got to identify why. Is it a tactical issue or is it a technical issue? Is he trying to hit balls that aren't there along the ground for four, balls that he should possibly be defending or going back to. If it's not that, then technically a massive common fault for this sort of problem would be that the player has taken too big a step to play the shot. You hear people saying, take a big stride to the ball. Well, it's a bit of a myth that, because the bigger the stride you take, the more your head's set back in your body, the harder it is to reach out in front of you with your arms and keep your elbow up. And also, most importantly, get your head over the ball as you hit it, so you're nicely balanced. So I would say to that person, look to get your head further forward than your front foot. And when you make contact with the ball to drive, again, your head should still be forward of the front foot. And after the shot, head's got to be still forward of the front foot. But if you're taking a big stride, the chances are you're going to lean back and hit the ball in the air.
Could it be anything to do with the setup as well, like the positioning of the hands on the handle, that kind of thing?
Maybe holding it right down the bottom of the bat, and maybe they're crouching low in their stance, which leads them to sort of be leaning back and to chip it in the air. Maybe their weight in their stance is on their back foot. To be totally 100% on this, I'd have to see the player play. But my guess is most common thing would be too big a stride, head not far enough forward, and not staying down as and after he's hit that ball.
So chances are it's going to be something to do with the weight not quite getting forward. How would you go about correcting that problem where the batsman is sitting back a bit and they're not getting their head far enough forward when they're driving?
I would make sure that in their stance that their head is pushed slightly forward over that front foot. That would help. I would encourage that person to lead to the ball with their head, not their foot. I would probably put an arc of cones just out in front of them and say to that person, step up to the cones, but you must make contact with the ball the other side of the cones. And the only way that they're going to do that and hit the lob ball along the ground is to get their head as far forward as they possibly can. Or you could have a cone sort of halfway down the wicket, straight, mid-off and mid-on, and say, a progressive practice here, hit the ball, and as you hit it, hold your shape for a second and then run all the way to the specific cone that you should be running towards. So if it's an offside delivery, you run to the offside cone. If it's a straight one, you run to the straight one. If it's leg side, you run to the leg side cone. But always follow that practice up with the progression from that would be, I'm going to hit the ball at the cone I think it should go at. The toe of my bat should finish at that particular cone. But I've got to hold my shape for 3 seconds with my head further out than my front foot. Anything that lures a player to go forward, lean forward, is going to help them to lean in. But it's all about the head. It's like when an ice skater puts their arms out and balances over that front foot and goes around the ice in a circle. That's sort of where you really should be as you hit the ball.
Thank you, Gary, for your time. Again, if you want to find out more about Gary Palmer and his coaching methods, please visit www.pitchfishing.com/Gary Palmer. Now, David, I'm really excited about this. We have Sam Lavery helping us with our questions this week. Sam has been a coach for 12 years, and he's currently the head coach at ProCoach Cricket Academy. So you can find out more about Sam and the ProCoach Cricket Academy at www.procoachcricketacademy.com. Now, Sam really knows what he's talking about because he spends 20 hours a week coaching players of all levels, right up to the first-class players, David, so he should be a real help for us this week.
Hi, Sam. Welcome along to the show.
Hi there, David.
Okay, Sam, our first question is from Damien, and he says, hi, guys. Do I need help? I'm driving after almost every ball I get. I'm always getting out by driving. I try to stop, but I can't. I can do much better, but I don't know why I have an obsession with driving. My coach says that if I get out attacking again, I'll be dropped. I recently came from playing limited overs under 19, and now I'm playing unlimited overs under 16s. Please give me tips on how to fix my obsession with driving. I don't want to get dropped, and I'm feeling pressured. So I'm going to leave this straight to you, Sam.
Okay, well, it looks like there are probably two key issues there that he's dealing with. He's obviously having a problem with playing off the front foot, hitting the ball down the ground, or maybe he's trying to play off the front foot when he shouldn't be. So we've got what we call a technical issue there. He also seems to be developing some sort of psychological or mental issue as well, where he's losing confidence, clearly. He's getting a bit of pressure from his coach or his coaching staff or possibly other teammates. And as a result of that, he feels that's affecting his performance as well. So it's becoming sort of a downward spiral for him, where his technical issues are causing mental problems for him, but then the mental problems are then adding to his technical issues, and each is hand-in-hand getting worse and worse as we go along. The key area that I'd look at working on is if he could fix this technical issue, in doing that, that might help him with his confidence slightly, and we can then balance out the two. From what I can tell from what he said, he's obviously having some sort of problem with hitting the ball and driving. Now, the main issue here is he's probably not picking up the length of the ball properly. So maybe his shot selection could do with a little bit of work. Possibly there are other technical issues as well, because he says when he pushes the ball in the air, I think he said it in there as well, which suggests that when he's defending, he's probably defending the ball out in front of himself. So he's playing the ball very early and pushing the ball up in the air. So a couple of things we'd look at doing is probably trying to get him to play the ball as late as possible. Also, more importantly, trying to pick up which balls to play at, when to drive, when not to drive, and also probably when to try and use his feet in the other direction, move backwards as well, because it sounds like he doesn't really have much of a back foot game from what he suggested there. So we'd really look at spending some time focusing on how he picks up the length of the ball, and then how he goes about transferring his weight there, and then also looking at the timing of the ball as well. So there's a few little areas which we'd look to improve on to start with. I'd like to think that if he could work on those technical areas, the mental side of his game should pick up, because as long as he understands that the reasons for his concerns are all actually directly linked to his performances, and his performances are completely controlled by himself and not by the pressure of other people, I feel he should be able to work on that as well. So if he just worries about his own technique and works on that and doesn't worry about too much about the pressure other people are putting on him, he'd like to think that he can make some improvements and hopefully settle down in his mind.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. Getting a player to be more confident when judging line length is quite a tricky thing to do, though, I find. I mean, it's one of those things that you pick up over time, just naturally from facing bowlers in the nets and having time in the middle. But if you're not confident in your ability to do that, then one simple drill that I quite like with younger players is to just have them throwing tennis balls to each other and either going forward or going back and catching the tennis ball, depending on what length the ball is.
Yeah, definitely. That works well, I think. I've seen that used quite a lot, and I've used it a few times. That's a good start, I think, yeah.
And then, obviously, then you get in the nets then and as quickly as possible and start facing real bowlers. Another problem that can happen is if you are lucky enough to have access to a bowling machine, you can get obsessed by the bowling machine giving you half volleys and you're working on grooving your drives, which is not a bad thing, especially if you've got any technical errors. But you can forget how to pick up the clues from the bowler. But you can't get that very easily from a bowling machine, because it just fires the ball out and you can't pick up those important clues that you need to be able to judge the line and the length early. So we don't know about Damien's particular circumstances, but I would say that if he's facing the bowling machine a lot, then he probably wants to cut down on how much he's facing the bowling machine and focus more on getting in the nets and getting used to facing real bowlers if line and length is an issue.
Yeah, I can completely agree with that. I mean, I think there are various layers and there are various stages that a player needs to go through to develop his technique and have it ready for match use, really, and ready to perform in a game. All the way from a basic drill with a tennis ball, where we might be hitting a straight drive off the front foot and then hitting a back foot drive off the back foot, and we just get them used into the routine of having those two as two separate shots. Obviously, at that level, a straight drive and a back foot shot as well, where we're playing two different length balls, are completely separate. And we need to somehow be able to put them together so when it comes to a net situation, we can play them both depending on the position of the ball. Now, the way I like to do it is I sort of progress players in layer by layer, where they can have, they might work on specifically working on a drive shot from underarm bobble feed, say, and then they might move it on to a bowling machine at a nice steady pace, or even on a double bounce, then a full pace bowling machine. But at some stage, that transition's then got to go into watching the ball out of the hand. So that's the key stage. It looks where he's at. It looks like he's, if he can get these technical flaws sorted on the bowling machine, that's great. But he has got to move on to that progression of seeing the ball out of the hand and judging where the ball's going and picking the ball up early.
Okay, Sam, our next question is from Chad, and he says, I've searched many sites, but I cannot find how to bowl the drifter. Any tips on how you can give it to me? What are your thoughts, Sam?
Okay, well, first of all, I think we just have to sort of specify what we think of as a drifter. Now, a drift can work in a few ways. So it could be just drift in general, so how he can generate drift as a spin bowler or as a slow bowler. I like to call him a spin bowler, really. Not really a big fan of just slow bowling. So it might be that he's just looking to drift the ball with his spin. The other option that it could be he's looking for that arm ball. So as an off spinner, possibly he's looking to develop that shape as an arm ball, really. So it gives him an alternate where he can have the ball moving away from the batsman as a right-handed batsman. And the other thing it could be, which you might be getting slightly confused about, but it could also be the slider. As a leg spinner. So there's a few different options there, which it might be. So, it will mainly depend on the interpretation of a drifter and what he's actually looking for. How would you regard and interpret the drifter there, David?
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, my initial thought was, that drift that the leg spin bowler gets when he's giving it a real rip and it's the ball's going drifting in the air like a swing bowler would drift it in the air and then it hits the pitch and turns as a normal leg break would, you know, that Shane Warne ball of the century type of delivery.
Exactly.
That's what immediately sprung into my head. And if you think of that, the way to do it, there's actually a technique for that. There's a very good book about this called The Art of Wrist Spin Bowling.
Yeah.
By a leg spinner called Peter Philpott. And he talks about there's two types of leg breaks. There's the standard leg break, and then there's the what he calls the big leg break, which is the one that does what Shane Warne did to Mike Gatting all those years ago.
Yeah.
And there's an actual technique to it. It's not just or give it an extra rip. There's an actual technique to it where you're trying to impart more backspin on the ball by adjusting your wrist position. So it's quite hard to get right, because if you go too far with your wrist, it becomes a googly.
Yeah.
And suddenly what you think is going to be this massive turning, drifting in the air leg break, fizzing past the outside edge, suddenly turns into a googly and you fired it down the leg side. So it takes a lot of practice to get the wrist position correct. But it is a matter, giving it a rip is the first part of it, but getting the wrist position correct to make it drift in the air and get that, what they call the Magnus effect, isn't it? When the ball's really fizzing through the air. Yeah, there's a definite technique to that.
Yeah.
So if Chad's talking about that, then I would recommend, I'm not a leg spinner myself. I can just about turn a leg break, but that's about it. But very inaccurately. Get that book, because it explains it in a lot of detail, and there's diagrams and things in there to show you how to do it.
Well, so if it's the leg break he's looking for, I've spent the last 5 months training where Mark Lawson, who's played 30, 40 first class games with Yorkshire and Derbyshire, and I've been working with him twice a week for the last 4 or 5 months, really, in his pre-season. And I would say by no stretch of the imagination should you be getting hung up if you can't regularly generate drift. It's not something that you see regularly on TV with international or first-class bowlers all the time anyway. I think everyone's just been spoiled slightly by the fact we've had Shane Warne knocking around for the last 15 years, that we expect drift to be a natural part of everyone's armoury as a spin bowler or as a leg spin bowler.
Okay, so that's the leg spinner sorted. What if he's talking about the arm ball? How do you coach the off-spinner or the slow left-armer to bowl an arm ball?
Okay, well, I mean, the general principle of the arm ball anyway is just trying to recreate an outswing delivery that a seam bowler may bowl. But obviously, we're trying to do it under the guise of being a spin bowler. So we're trying to recreate the impression that we're still bowling as a spin bowler, and it's still going to be a spinning delivery. But obviously, we're trying to get the ball to shape away from the batsman rather than have that sharp turn back into the batsman. I mean, the way we're going to do it is just slightly changing the grip, just to change the angle of the seam. Now, obviously, when we're usually bowling, we want to have the seam spinning forwards and sideways so that we're getting that bounce and that turn on the ball. So as it lands, it turns and bounces back in towards the batsman. So if you imagine the position of the seam as it's spinning, we ideally have the seam rotating around on its axis so it can have the seam nice and organised all the way down. But the seam would be pointing from mid off diagonally towards fine leg. The slight variation here now is rather than the ball spinning forwards and sideways, for the arm ball, the ball's going to spin backwards and sideways. Okay, so the seam's going to remain upright, but we're now going to have the seam pointing from mid on across to third man. Okay, so we're now recreating that position that we get as an outswing bowler where we have the seam angling away. And I think it's important for guys to understand the actual reasoning for what we're going to do and how we're going to do it. So recreating that swing bowling position is what we're actually trying to do. In doing that, the way we actually do it is rather than getting up over the top of the ball, we're actually going to try and undercut the ball slightly and push the ball forwards with our index finger. So we don't have to make a massive variation with the grip. You might find that the middle finger, rather than being spread across the seam as well as the index finger, the middle finger drifts a little bit higher up the ball so to allow the index finger to run down the seam as you release. But ideally, what we're looking to do is rather than getting that index finger up and over the top of the ball, we're looking to let it run down the back or just run down the side of the ball so that we can create that angle with the seam away to sort of third man or first slip, second slip area. Hopefully then, we can start to get a little bit of drift. Again, it's a personal thing. Everyone has a slightly different grip for their spin bowling. And as a result of that, everyone's going to have a slightly different grip for their arm ball, just so that we can conceal it and it doesn't look too obvious. But that's going to come with time. You'll probably find the arm ball, in comparison to drifting the ball, is a much easier thing to do. It's a much more simple thing to do.
And it's very important to practice it. A lot of players, especially sort of club level, school level, that kind of thing, they might practice regularly bowling their standard delivery, be that an off break or the left arm version of it, where they're putting the ball on the spot and working out how to give the ball flight and dip and all the rest of it, all those very important things.
But yeah, sure.
It's very important also to make sure that you take some time. And I always say, roughly speaking, you probably want to split it about 80-20, 80% your stock ball, 20% your variations. 20% of the time, make sure that you do practice the arm ball and find out what works best for you, what angle of the seam works best for you, what length you want to get it, and what's the optimum speed to bowl it at. Because generally speaking, you want to bowl it a little bit fuller and a little bit quicker than you would your stock delivery, so you probably wouldn't have because it's not spinning as much, you wouldn't have as much dip or you wouldn't give it as much flight. So generally speaking, we want to be a bit flatter and a bit fuller.
And
you've got to practice that, haven't you?
With the arm ball, there's no reason that you shouldn't literally spend sort of 15-20 minutes in a session just bowling your arm ball, practicing over and over again, getting a feel for it. Obviously, you're going to spend the majority of your time, and I always try and tell young spin bowlers especially to try and start a session and finish a session with their stock delivery. So whether they're a young leggy or an off spinner, or they bowl Chinaman or whatever they bowl, try and start with your stock delivery and try and finish with it as well. But in between, if you're looking at working on some variations, spend some time on it, have a feel for it, work out what suits you, work out what's going to work for different conditions as well. The other thing is talk to batsmen, which I think is key for variations. You've got to speak to the batsmen. You've got to ask them what they see. Do they see it as an off spinner? Do they see it as an arm ball? Can they pick it straight away? Off spinner or leg spinner, you've got to communicate with your batsman and your wicketkeeper as much as you can in training sessions, just so you get a feel for what they're actually seeing, rather than just thinking, well, I'm getting the ball shaping away, but it might be the most obvious arm ball that they've ever seen. So maybe it's not as effective as it could be. So I think good communication between other players around you is pretty important as well for when you do practice.
Okay, Sam and David, our lucky last is from M. Schofield, and he says, which part of the body would you correct if there is a mixed action, the back foot landing or the upper body? So I'm going to leave this one to you guys. What do you reckon?
Again, everybody's different, but in this situation, I think in 90-95% of the cases, we would really try and look to adjust the upper body. The landing position of the feet is a very natural thing to everyone as an individual, and people will instinctively land in a specific way, whether it's front on, side on, midway. It doesn't really matter too much, to be honest. So people will instinctively land in that position. The upper body then can be tinkered with, and it's not easy to change. Some people might have bowled for a year, 2 years. Some people might have bowled for 15, 20 years. And obviously, the longer they bowl and the longer they spend time bowling with a particular style, it becomes a little bit more difficult to fix. But ideally, what we'll try and do is match up the upper body with the lower body if possible, just by changing arm position, changing that body position, and trying to recreate the same angle with the upper body as the lower body. Doing it the other way around is a very much a long, drawn-out process, and changing foot position does take a lot longer. The one preconception that some people will have is they may be front-on with their feet and sideways on with their upper body, and they may have been told at some stage, bowling's a side-on game, you need to be bowling from sideways on, and they might look to change their feet. I'd refute that straight away. I'd always say that it doesn't matter whether you're front-on, side-on or midway, if you're a seam bowler, you'll be able to do everything from that position. You'll be able to swing the ball in, you'll be able to swing the ball away, and again, you'll be able to hit the seam. The other important thing we have to assess as well when we're changing our body from front-on to side-on or vice versa is just the loading position of the bowling arm as well. If we're loading the ball up as a side-on bowler, it's going to be pretty much under our chin, close to our chest. And the other way around, if we're a front-on bowler, we're going to try and load up that ball in front of the right shoulder. And all that is trying to do is promote straight lines from where we are towards our target and try and get those arms operating in straight lines throughout the action.
You can, the way I see it is, I mirror what you're saying there, and the way I see it is with the lower body, once that foot lands, then you're locked into that position. So it's a lot harder to change a locked in position than an open position like the upper body. The upper body's never locked in. So just in terms of how it feels, it's a lot easier to change the feel of the upper body, relatively speaking, than it is the lower body, because you're not locked in. You can make those small adjustments. And the good thing about changing the upper body as well is that it's something that you can start the process at home. You know, if you even just with a mirror, you can just stand in front of the mirror and just get that positioned correct. You know, from the back foot landing position, you can stand there.
Exactly that. I've spoken to a few guys who are currently first class cricketers who will spend the first part of their pre-season, which is probably from sort of start of November, but literally doing that, they stood in front of a mirror without a ball, even just checking that loading position where they're setting up in their coil or in their gabba, and just making sure that position is exactly how they want it, and just trying to get that feel of how it actually feels to you as a bowler when you're in the right position, and then maybe making a little adjustment and thinking, well, how does it feel? How does that feeling vary when I'm not in the right position? And that is the first step on the road to making a slight change to the bowling action. So that's a very, very simple thing that everyone can do. I'm sure everyone's got a mirror they can get their hands on. And again, no equipment needed, and that's step one to making a change to the action.
Well, that's all we have from the question side this week, but we still have our Pitch Vision competition, and David, you have the winner for this week.
Yeah, three good questions this week, but I think quite a good one, and one that made me think a little bit before I answered, was the last one from M. Schofield, whoever M. Schofield is. So I'll be in touch with you via email, and you can get your free coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy. So just explain to anyone who's listening who's not sure about how to enter the competition how they can do that for next week, Kevin.
Yeah, it's really easy, isn't it? All you have to do is send in your question or even a comment for the week, and in the subject you enter podcast competition, and you have to send that in to mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. That's mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. And the price is really amazing, David, because you get a course for free on Pitchvision Academy, so there's lots of incentives out there for everyone listening. And if that isn't enough for you, you can get more information, tips, advice and tricks on our website at www.pitchvision.com. The site is updated daily and includes forums to chat with other cricketers around the world. You can also subscribe to the Pitchvision Academy show for free on iTunes, or you can click the link on the show's page that will take you directly to iTunes to subscribe. Stay tuned for our next show on the 9th of April. So if you want to get in touch, have any questions, or you want to enter the competition, again, you can email us at mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. Thanks for listening, and we hope to see you next time. So from Sydney, Australia, this is Kevin Sampat signing off.
And I'm Sam Lavery.
This is David Hinchcliffe in the UK.